Accession number 20304, Reel 4.
Alan Clark, Reel 4.
They decided that we should go do a night march with mules up this very, very steep hilly Jebel, which we did. And the one thing that sticks in the mind of that area was when the sun was going down, the air was so clear that the hills in the distance, they changed colour from sort of mauve to purple to pure black. Really startling, the effect there. Had a leave in, a few days in Damascus, a trip into Damascus. Quite a dirty city, but a nice leave in Beirut. That was a lovely place. Great influence of the French, of course, because they were there, Lebanon, in early days. So, as the French usually mixed in with the local population, there's some very beautiful women there. Beautiful city. God knows what it's like now, when they bombed and blown it up there. And after that, all these leave, they decide we had Christmas 44 in Palestine. And then they decided, well, we didn't know at the time, but we were shipped back to Italy and put in a sealed camp for a little while. And then they told us that we were going up to Germany eventually. And we were transported from this camp to Marseille, by boat, of course. And from Marseille, we had 3 days in the cattle trucks. And we stopped at various Yankee camps. And their organisation for giving you food, marvellous again. They're really, on the ball. And we arrived in Belgium, place called Oostakker eventually. We didn't bring any of our equipment with us, only small arms. That was all left behind. And we'd been reinforced while we were in Palestine by a great number of Royal Artillery AKAK regiments, light AKAK regiments, which they used to have in the desert. These chaps, they've been out probably since 41, up and down the desert, mostly territorials, and they converted them to infantry because, of course, the German Air Force wasn't very dominant in those days and they didn't need anti-aircraft guns so much because we were, dominant on the Air Force side. But they fitted in very well, came from all sorts of areas, can't remember where, but anyway, they fitted all in very well. We got to this place called Oostakker, which is outside Ghent, and those were the days. We were billeted in private houses. And those were the days when they used to empty the cesspit into a large container, like a huge barrel drawn by a horse, on a cart drawn by a horse. And they used to tip all the waste in there, scoop it out, and then take it out into the fields and turn the tap on at the back, this huge barrel, and let it run down the furrows, and the smell was disgusting. You can really imagine. I don't remember when we started. Well, we were just equipping, and the battalion played soccer against the local club, I think, and they were all very friendly. And a good many of them were black marketeers too, because when we were leaving, one or two of the odd blankets went missing for a bottle of Belgium schnapps, and as I said, we had a couple of days in Ghent, and then we started to move up by train into Germany. We got to Goch, which was still being shelled, and then we moved further forward to a place called Osnabrück, which was the railway terminus of, I don't know what route, but it was sort of in the centre of Germany. All the trains sort of met there and went there different ways. And remembering the bombing of London, Osnabrück was absolutely devastated. It was absolutely flattened. Never seen anything like it. Really flattened. And then we were told about all these werewolves, young fellows about 16 and 17, sniping you through the train and all this sort of thing, but nothing happened like that. And eventually we were supposed to take a village called Blekidi, which is just the west side of the Elbe. We're getting, you know, towards the end of the war now. And we had the Guards Armoured Division, and we rode on tanks with them for some time, which was a new experience. And we were to take this village. In those days, they had organised a company carrier which carried all the ammunition, spare ammunition, and myself and the driver were on this carrier. I forgot to mention that while we were in the Middle East, I started playing cricket and rugby for the battalion. And so I got myself a fairly quiet job in the company office, quartermaster, sergeant's clerk, see. That was a bit of a fiddle, I think. Anyway, they said you can ride in a carrier with old Biff Batkins, with his name. And the rest of the company, or the battalion, went forward to take this village. Well, it was typical of the time, apparently, that there was fierce resistance, and then it suddenly collapsed and they, you know, gave up and surrendered. We had, there was a lot of fighting around the station at Blekidi, and D Company got a bit of a pasting. They had an 88 millimetre gun there, and the guard Sherman tanks, they wouldn't go in the village because they knew they'd get knocked out. They turned the corner of the street, one shot from an 88 go right through them. So they didn't participate very much, so it was all infantry. Overnight there was nothing, and they all gave up the next morning. And surprisingly, there was a terrible mixture. There was odd paratroopers. There were a lot of Kriegsmarine, because I suppose the Elbe, you know, probably near Hamburg-ish, you see there, they took them off the boats. And a lot of young boys, you know, 17, 18. I remember one of these snipers, he might not have been a young boy, but he killed one of our, he was a carrier driver too, I think. He's one of the MM in Italy, and he was killed. There were quite a number of casualties, actually, on this this last action. Then, of course, we got into the village, and lots of the civilians, well, one or two civilians were wounded, and they were taken out of the houses. Then we took up positions almost on the bank of the Elbe, looking over the to the other side. The village must have been a Nazi centre of some sort, because when we went round having a look for odd things, you know, we came across a store racked various things on, vests with the Nazi symbols on them and clothes, and all to do with the Nazi, probably the youth movement, lots of equipment of that sort of nature. So we decided that this was a Nazi village, and things started to go missing from various places. Better not say. In fact, we did a bit of looting. Well, why not? And of course, the people that were on the had vehicles, like our company 30 hundredweight, and the carrier platoon and the anti-tank platoon, they had these portees, and they could stack up with stuff and wine and etc. etc. But people who had to carry it couldn't very well take much, could they? Anyway, it was all quiet, and they decided. I think the Yanks had made an effort right down on the right of us, and we were to cross. The engineers had put a bailey bridge across a little way away from the village, and we moved to go across. And must have been in daylight. One platoon of A Company was on one of these 3-tonner they actually had seats on them in these big 3-tonners to take a platoon, about 30, you know, 28 people. And the Germans bombed the bridge just as it was going over. It went, the lorry went down into the, it's a very fast flowing, the Elbe, went down in, all the platoon was lost, A Company. So they delayed, of course they had to delay us crossing, and that they put us in a huge warehouse type place, just by and very near where the Bailey Bridge was erected. And the engineers mended that, but we were bombed during the night. But nothing. I think they were probably aiming at the bridge, and they didn't. And of course, next morning, they'd repaired the bridge, and we got on these troop carriers. That's what they were called. We got on these troop carriers to go across. Everybody undid all their equipment and undid their boots, just in case. In case you got put in a drink, and you could might stand a chance if you hadn't got anything on. Anyway, we got over the other side, and this is when the Germans started really to surrender in huge groups. They were marching towards us as we went up to a place called Mohn, spelt M-O-umlaut. LLM, something like that, Mohn. And they were marching down the road in four abreast, hundreds of them. And we stopped in Mohn, and we were supposed to have done another attack, but that all fell away. They didn't. The Germans had gone, those that were resisting. And we cleared civilians out of houses, you know, Germans, so we could be billeted there. and lovely. Up in the bedroom, lay on the bed. First time I've been in a proper bed for about 4 years. And tried to go to sleep, couldn't sleep. So I got off the bed and laid on the floor, went off like a lamb. So we're very near the end now of the war. I can't remember exactly where it was that they said it was the 8th of May, obviously, but I can't remember where we were. But we were all very sober. Somebody found a bottle of German white wine from somewhere, and we had a little drink, and that's all. And that was the end. We went on up to, in various stages, up to Lübeck, where we've actually finished. But one of the, an incident that stands out in my mind, in one of these places we took over billets from the parachute regiment. There was a huge barn on the first floor sort of arrangement, covered in straw where they'd been sleeping. And was a woman and a young child. And they brought this kiddie out, absolutely screaming. What had happened, one of the paratroopers had left a phosphorus grenade, I probably forgot it, in the straw. The boy had got hold of it, stripped off the tape round the top, and exploded in his face. I've never seen such a mess. That was worse than seeing, you know, you're conditioned to seeing wounded and, you know, when you're in any sort of action. But to see this in a civilian context, it was really horrific. And the poor woman was screaming and the boy was screaming, and they took him away in a jeep. That's a sort of a shocking incident, really. Anyway, we finished up at Lübeck, which is right on, practically on the coast, North Germany. What did we do then? Oh, we had a victory parade there at Lübeck. It's quite an old town, actually. Whether it had been rebuilt over the years, you know, sort of 13th century old timber places. And then this is where they started. Started carving up the German side of it, and the Russians were going to move further this way. We went back to a place called Stendal, and we were billeted in Luftwaffe barracks for a day or two, and they were absolutely terrific, magnificent places. All hot water radiators all around the barracks rooms. And we were surprised as the Russians began to take over and we moved back farther to a place called Wismar, they were still using horse-drawn transport. And we landed up at Wismar. And there was a barrier across the road with the Russians were on the other side and we were this side. Quite a pleasant little place. Of course, this was the time when Montgomery said there was a non-fraternisation ban and you couldn't fraternise with any of the Germans, but that didn't make much difference, I can tell you that. Later on, we moved back to various places. Of course, the war being over now, we moved back to a place called Bad Gandersheim. And it was a village, more or less. They had a dance hall, and they opened corporals' messes and sergeants' messes. And it was getting back to peacetime soldiering. They had an open-air swimming pool which was fed by an underground stream. Practically every small town or village in Germany had this, you know, strength through joy and all this German philosophy. And we used to play water polo. I used to play water polo in there, and it was freezing cold with the stream going running through, you see. And I say we started going back to peacetime soldiering because it was a regular battalion, and started doing drill by the drum and that sort of thing, beat of the drum. And
how do you do that?
Well, they just tap, and you would that meant to come to attention, tap tap, shoulder arms, another tap, and the piper would probably be playing as well at the same time. And we used to go on boar shoots, file the top of a 303, because it would expand and kill him, we hope. And then, of course, there was rugby and soccer, and we had a cricket net. We had a sports day. And, of course, we did the odd route march and that. But it was rather, as I say, going back to regimental, pre-war regimental soldiering. At the end of the route march, you had to double bar at the trail, and the piper would play the regimental quick march, and the colonel would stand the salute as you doubled by. It wasn't very amazing. You may, oh God, imagine. But that was a good time there, Bad Gandersheim. Then we moved back to a place called Goslar, which was near the Harz Mountains, and we used to go up. There was one or two places, the old hunting lodges that they used to use, because there was a lot of toing and froing, you know, people nipping over from, I suppose it was East Germany, yeah, the Russian zone and over, and they used to patrol it. I didn't do any patrolling in those days. And we went out to one of these hunting lodges, and we got snowed in there for about 3 days, which was rather good. And they had German chefs, or German cooks, women and men, cooking our rations, and they made a damn good job of it too. Excellent. So that was a little bit of experience. And at this place, Goslar, we were billeted up the hill in a big house. I was with Company HQ still, so I was out of the normal company duties. And well, it was quite a cold winter, that 45 winter, and there was snow on the ground, as I said. And we used to toboggan down this steep hill into the town, which was a bit of a laugh. And then, of course, there was the black market men selling you snaps of them, and the beer killers. The beer was disgusting. And, well, there was organised dances, of course, regimental dances. The other thing I remember, there was a German hospital in one of the, well, I think it was the main street. And there were quite a lot of young soldiers sitting along the wall there, and most of them were amputees, had one leg or two legs off. And we tried to, you know, speak to them. Well, we did, because I could speak a little German. And they were mostly from the Russian front, frozen amputees from frozen legs. But that was a good station too, Goslar. And the next, we were told that we were to go back. We're going back home. There's a demonstration battalion at the School of Infantry at Warminster. And so I arrived back home. We came from a whole battalion move, of course, by train to the Hook, Holland, and across to Harwich. and a train, I don't know how they did it, but it went all around London somehow and got to Warminster. And that was a good station because of playing rugby there and cricket. I used to play cricket on I don't know if it was Sir Philip Sassoon. He had a huge house just behind Nook Camp where we were stationed. This was outside Warminster. And we used to play cricket on his ground. I can't remember the name of the village, but we played them and all sorts of other sides. And of course, we played rugby. This is where we played in the quite a lot of games. And we entered the Salisbury Plain District Major Unit competition, and we won that. We beat the School of Infantry, and I played in that game. And of course, I was now in the quartermaster's office, so I didn't take any part in any of the demonstrations tearing up the hills with tanks and things at Warminster.
Were you in the office because of your spotting?
Well, they always used to find if you did manage to prove yourself, when they would. But actually, the quartermaster's clerk had been demobbed, so I was lucky because that happened in Germany, and they moved me into regimental stores and with a regimental quartermaster.
But why didn't they want sportsmen to do training?
Well, because sportsmen had to train to play sport, didn't they? That was the normal thing there. If you were any good, I mean, we had a cricketer who was a storeman on C Company or something. He was Yorkshire. He played for Yorkshire Colts, you see. So those things happened. I mean, it was generally known in pre-war regimental life that, you know, if they were, they found them a quiet job somewhere, you know, that you could. So that was very successful, being home again. Warminster in those days wasn't bad. The pubs were good, the girls were friendly. And then the battalion was detailed to go to Gibraltar. And of course, those that were coming up for demob were left behind. And I went up to Lanark, to the regimental depot, Winston Barracks, Lanark. And it was a freezing winter too. That must have been 46 winter. And there was some of them were detailed to shovel snow from the coal mine entrances and things like that. Anyway, that was we weren't in the modern barracks where all the young recruits were coming, Winston Barracks. They were very good, heated, nice places. We were in the old Nissen huts. I can remember waking up one morning and the condensation from my breathing and my moustache had stuck to the blanket, froze to the blanket. You won't believe that, of course, but it's true. And then I was demobbed at York and back to civilian life.
How much part does sport play in an army battalion?
A great deal, I would say. I mean, they had hockey side, soccer side, which of course the Scots were rampant soccer players, of course. And they did play cricket, and then they played rugby. And then there was the athletic side. I was told about the swimming. They put a team into the divisional championships when we were in Germany. I went as a reserve in that. And then there was cross-country running, which was a great feature of army life in those days, especially in India, where they used to tear up the cud. So really...